So today is going to be our first official lecture on alkenes. And in fact, this will be an elaboration of what we did in lab on the topic of electrophilic additions to alkenes. I'd like to go over a very specific case, and the reason that I am doing this case that I'm about to do is because it will generate stereocenters at both of the positions where the double bond used to be before the reaction occurs. So this is going to be a deuterated alkene, and we'll have a secondary, or what could become a secondary carbon, versus what could become a tertiary carbon. So you might remember that our discussion in lab lecture about alkenes, alkenes do have these pi bonds that have electron density that's not right directly in between the two atoms. And so it's a bit more accessible to other things from the outside. Pi bonds, carbon-carbon pi bonds, certainly break more easily than carbon-carbon single bonds. So we had seen bromine as the main reactive reagent in lab, but you might remember that leading up to that reaction of bromine, I actually showed you a different mechanism involving, I think it was just HBr, wasn't it? And so I'm going to do the same type of reaction here, where I have just an alkene and HBr. The hydrogen in HBr is an electrophile, something that is electron deficient, would not mind being attacked by something that has electrons. And that's going to be the alkene. Now, of course, hydrogen can only have one bond at a time, and so if something is reaching out to attack the hydrogen, then hydrogen's bond with bromine has to dissociate. Now, of course, if we had an aqueous solution of HBr, it would already be dissociated. But if I'm writing it as a compound, then formally I need to write that it's dissociating.
Should the HBr be the strong acid?
You do need, for this kind of mechanism, a strong acid or acid catalyst. So this first mechanism we're seeing is where the acid itself is the reagent. And there's a small number of reagents that will have exactly the same mechanism. And this is the easiest case, so that's why we're tackling it first. Now, there's two regiochemical possibilities. We'll get to the stereochemical significance or the complications in a moment. But if we just deal with the regiochemical possibilities, this is actually something that came up in our discussion in lab, where there's one of two carbocations that could be made. The hydrogen that just came from HBr could end up on what now is the secondary carbon, generating a tertiary carbocation, or we could have that hydrogen end up at the now tertiary position, generating instead a secondary carbocation. Which of the two possibilities is far more likely to occur? The first possibility. Why? Because it makes a tertiary carbocation. And although this is not an SN1 reaction that I'm showing you, you might remember that I quoted these values that the book had for rates of an SN1 reaction. And tertiary was way, way, way faster, by thousands of times faster than reaction of a secondary. So using, although in a different mechanism, using similar logic, if the secondary carbocation is so much less favorable than the tertiary, then it really just is not in appreciable quantities going to form. And so that first step of the reaction, when you have addition so that whatever comes next to attack ends up at the most substituted position, that's called Markovnikov addition. So let me finish the mechanism actually first before I define what Markovnikov addition is. But just remember that this is the regiochemical consequence, one of them. Because later we'll go back and talk about carbocation migration. So, this is the regiochemically preferred intermediate. And at least for now, I'll say tertiary carbocation, more favorable than secondary.
But why I chose to use a deuterated starting material will now become clear. Because if I start over in the mechanism again and I focus on stereochemistry instead, when that double bond attacks the hydrogen, it could happen from above or below the position of the double bond, couldn't it? Which means that in terms of dashes and wedges, the hydrogen might be pointed towards us or away from us. In other words, at that one position, because the double bond is planar, then using the same logic we used in SN1 reactions, we can say that we're going to end up with two intermediates. So notice what's going on, and I won't know yet whether what we've done has been effective. But we spent all this time earlier in the quarter going over simpler cases and almost to death talking about details. And one of the repeating themes has been about stereochemistry and what it means to have a planar intermediate. Notice this is a brand new reaction that we haven't discussed yet, and yet I can very quickly refer to the fact that it's planar, and I saw the shake of your heads. Most of you therefore realize, oh, that means it's going to have two possible outcomes. And this is why I say that it's not good just to memorize mechanisms. You do need to know them. So how many of you have been making your flashcards? There we go. Well, not very many of you. How many of you expect to survive the third exam then? Well, that better be the same people that raised their hands for the flashcards. Because depending on how long it takes me to get through these details, we might get four reactions just today. Four more flashcards. Four new mechanisms. That's what it's going to be like almost every day next quarter. So although we've had this long, slow lead up, that's so that I don't have to spend half an hour explaining, well, it's planar, so this might happen and this, and we've already been through all that. So as I go through the rest of the mechanism, if you have questions, don't be afraid to stop me. But realize that I might go quickly because I'm going to expect that you already understand the logic underneath the individual steps, even if the sequence of steps is new to you. So, soapbox done. The double bond can attack from either, I don't know, it's not even side or face, the top or the bottom of the pi bond. And so we end up with two intermediates. Oh, and please go back. In my haste to get to this topic, I've left off one carbon. And I will need that extra carbon. Please go back and put that in. Just so that once the other side of the double bond does react, we end up with a stereo center there. So I can show you fully the types of products that can form. So, tertiary carbon, carbocation more favorable than secondary. So these are the two intermediates that will result. Now it's arbitrary how I draw this right-hand stereo center. So whether you want the methyl group in the plane as I've done, or whether you want the hydrogen or the deuterium, it doesn't matter. What matters is you can get attacked from either side, and so you will form two intermediates. What is the stereo configuration where my pen is, RRS? 4, 5, 6. There we go. Yes, S. What is the stereo? What is now the stereo configuration at that position? Thank you. No, she's right. I had it wrong. So, two intermediates form. Due to the alkene being planar. Now, each one of these intermediates can be attacked by the bromide that's still in solution. And in fact, if HBr is your only reagent, that's exactly what's going to happen. But the carbocation is itself planar, is it not? And let's presume for the moment that the methyl group does not have a large steric influence on this reaction, because we have a sigma bond that at room temperature at least freely rotates. So at any one moment, there's
equal likelihood that the carbocation can be attacked from either side. So I'll show only one arrow. It gets confusing if you try to show with multiple arrows the multiple possibilities. Someone reading the mechanism, knowing about mechanisms, it would be clear enough to them just by seeing this. A person that knows about mechanisms would already know that this should be planar and should get attacked from both sides, so we're going to end up with four products, which will be the following. So the first two products will have the same kind of configuration on the right-hand carbon. The left-hand carbon, in one case, we could write the methyl group with a wedge, or, making sure I don't make the same mistake twice, the bromine I could write with a wedge instead. That would be from the first intermediate, but then we have two more possibilities of two other intermediates. And again, let me make sure I get them right. So now the hydrogen on the right will be the wedge. And then the last possibility is this. So we get a mixture of diastereomers. But they're also in the form of pairs of enantiomers. So if you notice, these first and last compounds are enantiomers, and so are the middle two. And so we will end up, in this case, with a racemic mixture. But having made that comment about racemic mixtures, I think I showed you a sort of trick question related to SN2 reactions in class the other day, did I not? Where I had two stereocenters, one of which reacted and one of which couldn't. And I know this is a side note, but this is an important point that I want to start emphasizing. That if we had something like an ether that does have a leaving group on it, is that ether going to want to be a leaving group? Will the ether itself want to be a leaving group? If I've made OH instead of an ether and asked the same question, would OH want to be a leaving group?
No.
Why? No, hydroxide's a strong base, and strong bases don't want to be leaving groups. Leaving groups are conjugate bases of strong acids, which means the leaving groups themselves should be not basic, correct? Well, if you tried to kick the oxygen off with the methyl group that's attached, you end up with O minus. That's even more basic than hydroxide. So it's an even poorer base than hydroxide. So let me just point out here, this is not a leaving group because, and remember, we've seen this ME abbreviation, even though I haven't been commonly using it yet, but methoxide, the name for this, is a strong base. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that when I put it in water, this compound, I get a reaction in which that methoxide has no steric effect. And let's assume further that we do not form ion pairs. This is now the third time I'm mentioning ion pairs in lecture. The ion pair formation is what explains why, even when you have a 50-50 chance of making products, it may not end up 50-50. If you don't remember that, please go back to the past lecture or go read that portion in the text, because I'm trying to broadcast. Maybe there'll be a question about it. But let's say that doesn't happen. And again, let's say the methoxide has no effect. And so I end up, in theory, with the possibility of having equal proportions of these two products.
Would this mixture be optically active then? Yes, because even though the one stereocenter cancels out from one molecule to another, you still have one stereocenter that doesn't. And so it doesn't matter that you've got 50-50 quantity. This is not 50-50 quantities of enantiomers. This is 50-50 of diastereomers. And only if you have 50-50 proportion of enantiomers do you form a racemic mixture. So let me make that note here. Even if these two products form in equal quantities. I didn't write this explanation out the last time I showed this example, did I? Okay, so it's worth doing this. Even if the two products form in equal quantities, the mixture will still be optically active. Since it is a mixture of diastereomers not enantiomers. So one loose way of saying it is that one stereocenter is not canceled out. So now, going back up, well, let me finish. Let you write that. Just out of curiosity, totally off topic, how many of you are registering for 12B, but your registration time has not come yet? Okay. Just want to make sure the class is filled up. Yeah. Yes, but it's not good for you. But ask that question again in lab when we talk about deuterated solvents again. Now, coming back to this discussion, in this case, because we only scattered with the double bond, there were no other stereocenters, and because the only stereocenters that formed were because of the reaction, that's why I can say in this case we're going to end up with an optically inactive mixture. Because we'll end up with 50-50 proportions, or 25-25-25-25, of the four major products. Shall we summarize the six aspects of the reaction, then? Because if you're going to be making your flashcard, yes. So what's the utility? Alkene to alkyl halide. Or, as you'll see momentarily, you could also use the same mechanism to make an alcohol or an ether. Identical mechanism. What are the reagents? A strong acid or a weak nucleophile with a strong acid catalyst. That's the variation that we're about to see that will let us make alcohols and ethers. What are the conditions? To really get it to perform correctly, no light. Because alkenes under light, specifically UV light, can undergo side reactions that we did not discuss, that we skipped over, in fact, in that radical chapter. The mechanism you have up above. So in terms of stereochemistry, you have loss. Actually, it's not loss of configuration because you didn't start out with any configuration. So you could just say no configuration. No particular configuration. Because you potentially have a mixture of four diastereomers. Now there's another term that we haven't used yet, although I might have mentioned it in passing when we discussed the alkene lab last week or 2 weeks ago, which is, what is the relative position of the two new things that just added to the double bond? So imagine this piece of paper is the alkene. One position, something added to the top or bottom. The other carbon, again, independent of what happened with the first one, you still had the potential addition to the top or the bottom. So you had one product like this, one product like this, one product like this, and one product like this, right?
Right.
I could make the paper levitate, I'd be rich, right? But that means there's no fixed orientation due to the mechanism itself. So what I'm going to be getting at is there's what's known as syn addition, S-Y-N, to the double bond, where both things add to the same face, the same whatever, of the double bond. Then there's going to be anti-addition, where on one carbon, one group points one way, and one carbon, the group points the other way. That doesn't happen in this case. So we'll get to those formal definitions when we see a reaction in which they occur. But just for the moment, I will say neither syn nor anti in terms of the stereochemistry of addition. Now, in terms of regiochemistry, what do we have there? We have Markovnikov addition. Which means that substitution will occur at the most substituted carbon. If you look at the products of the reaction, and I'll pull this up so you can finish writing momentarily. But we started out with an alkene that we added effectively bromine to. Yes, we added a hydrogen in there as well. But in Markovnikov, when we're discussing where addition occurs, since so often hydrogen is the first thing added, we're usually talking about what comes afterwards. And in this case, it was bromide. Bromide substituted at the more substituted position. Why? Because that's where the carbocation was more favorable to be formed. And that's what really Markovnikov addition is about. The fact that if you have this choice between carbocations, the more favorable one's going to be the one that occurs. And most of the time, you really are going to get far more preferential formation of this Markovnikov product. The one thing we haven't seen in this example, but we're about to in my next example, is the fact that we'll have carbocation rearrangement. So carbocation rearrangement is possible. Why? Because if we wanted to summarize this mechanism, and I'm sorry this is out of order, but it is cationic and stepwise. You might say, cationic, but there's Br minus involved. Yeah, but that's kind of an afterthought, in the sense that the main part of the reaction, the rate limiting step of the reaction, is the reaction of the alkene with the electrophile, which causes the formation of a cationic intermediate. It's because it's cationic, the intermediate, and specifically carbocationic, that we have these carbocation shifts that can occur. Questions about the mechanism or any of these six aspects of the reaction? Yes?
The substituted means?
The thing that came into attack.
Substitution will occur at the
most substituted position.
Substituted.
Most carbons. Any time in organic chemistry where we say most substituted, it means most carbons. Tertiary versus secondary versus primary, yes.
For the product, will the secondary form, but less or not form at all?
In real life, less
or maybe not at all. If there's a huge difference, you really won't see it. If you have two really close secondaries, one that maybe has a double bond next door, so there's conjugation, still you'll see a difference. I guess what I'm getting at is, yes, a little tiny bit will form, but usually small enough you don't even worry about it.
Does it need heat?
Some of these reactions do, some of them don't. So heat is not automatically a necessary condition of this reaction. Experience and specific cases. So if we get to specific cases where you do need to know it, I'll be sure to tell you. Questions? Then let's see our second version of this, but I almost recommend that you not make a separate flashcard. Just recognize the incredible similarities and learn one general mechanism. That's my recommendation. The second reaction we're going to see is of this alkene with water and a favorite compound of mine, which if you've got any wits about you, you know that if I say a favorite compound of mine, by golly, you're going to have it on a quiz or test question. This is the compound paratoluene sulfonic acid. So let's talk about that before we get any further. You might notice it bears a very striking resemblance to a particular leaving group that we've already discussed. Tosyl chloride, or tosyl groups in general. So although this is called paratoluene sulfonic acid, it is sometimes called tosic acid for short. We can even abbreviate tosic acid as TSOH. Remember that when we, there's my once a day, that when we abbreviated tosylates, we did not include the oxygen as part of that TS group. So tosyl doesn't have the oxygen in it. Tosyl hydroxide, there's no such compound, but that's what this would look like. But that turns, therefore, into tosic acid. Why am I so enamored by this compound? Because it's a solid, it's cheap, it's a strong acid, it's organic soluble, and the counter ion is non-nucleophilic. Want me to rattle off those aspects of this compound again? Tosic acid is an inexpensive, easily handled organic soluble solid that is a very strong acid which has a conjugate that is non-nucleophilic. So in other words, it gives up its little H plus, and that's all it's going to do. Since it's a solid, trivial to measure out, cheap, well, that speaks for itself. It's a catalyst, so we don't even use large quantities of it to begin with. It's organic soluble, so you know that it's going to be in the mixture. And most importantly, for what we're doing right now, it's a strong acid. So, the first step of the reaction will be that the alkene attacks H+, coming from the tosic acid. Now, this is continuing my habit of not worrying about where the hydrogen came from or went to, because we could get worried about it if we want to, spend endless time tracking it. Not the point of the reaction. Point's what's going to happen to the alkene. So that's why I'm simplifying in this way. In this case, Water would not be the proton source because water is not the strong acid. It would be coming from tosic acid. So once that reacts, there is only one intermediate that initially forms. Because there are already two hydrogens at the end of the molecule, putting a third one on there, we definitely are not creating a stereocenter. So although in the first example I showed you, we at this point had two intermediates, not always going to happen. In fact, it's going to be the exception for the examples that you see rather than the rule. At this point, there's this much more preferable tertiary position that the carbocation would be much more satisfied on than the secondary. And so you can and will get a carbocation shift. At this point, we have water left in solution. Water is able to attack that carbocation. And because we have two methyl groups at that point, we generate no stereocenter. So we still only have one intermediate, which, unlike the previous case, has yet one more step. Because water started out neutral, and so once it attacks, it must first deprotonate before we get our product. But notice that we started out with a double bond between the primary and secondary positions, but we ended up with the alcohol, which is our product, at the tertiary position. Now, I misspoke. These are not primary and secondary. Well, yeah, they are. They're still connected to just one carbon or two carbons. So they're positions that would become primary and secondary, but it doesn't happen because of the carbocation shift. Yes?
So why did you say there's no stereocenter?
Because there's two methyl groups at that point, and so that can't be a stereocenter. Because anytime you have two of the exact same substituent. Same thing for where the hydrogen ended up. There are already two hydrogens there, so no matter what got added in, that what became the primary carbon couldn't be a stereocenter either. Yes? If what? I'm sorry?
If it's not methyl, but it's like a long carbon chain.
Can the carbocation move up and down the chain? Yes, it can. And so that ends up being a complicating factor in these reactions. That's exactly why reactions with carbocation intermediates could be a problem. Which is exactly why there's alternate reactions. Yes, which we have the time to start learning some of today. Because what if we really wanted to put an alcohol just at that position? What? Too much chemistry in one day? Okay. We all got rested up over break, right?
No.
Well, yes. Usually I need a vacation to recover from vacation. But unfortunately, unfortunately, we're all here. So we better at least look busy. So we're going to go on. Because what if we really wanted to have some kind of reaction that would avoid carbocation migration and would give us the kind of alcohol that we want? So this reaction I'm about to show you is a distinct mechanism for what we did before. And this is called oxymercuration demercuration. It is actually not the best alternative in terms of environmental friendliness because it does use mercury-containing compounds as the reagent. In fact, it specifically contains mercury acetate. Now, mercury is a big, squishy atom, like bromine is a big, squishy atom. And you might remember in lab, when we talked about mechanisms, I showed you a mechanism and said, here's normal electrophilic addition. Which is what we just saw today. What we've been reviewing so far is quote-unquote normal addition. But then there are these other mechanisms bromine reacting, which is one, that you have a cyclic intermediate that forms instead. And there were several very important things related to that cyclic intermediate formation. Specifically, what does it mean for stereochemistry, and what does it mean for regiochemistry? Or how does regiochemical differences manifest themselves in this reaction? Well, let's use the same kind of contrived starting material so that we can again investigate all the stereochemical possibilities. Now, there's several ways of writing this first reaction step. And I'm going to show you kind of a hybrid of what I learned when I was an OCHEM student and what I've seen in different textbooks. First of all, to make our lives easier, we're going to use the AC abbreviation for acyl. So the AC group refers to the two carbons that I've circled plus the carbonyl. So if you put an O on there, it becomes acetate, which is what the OAC abbreviation really means. Acetate will get kicked off when mercury gets attacked by the alkene. At the same time, there's effectively a pair of electrons on mercury that back attacks. That's one way of showing it. Some people will actually show just one arrow coming from the alkene itself. What both of these versions are trying to show is the fact that because mercury is a big squishy atom, it will form a ring. We're also going to end up, because it's now made two connections to carbon, not just one, it's going to end up being positively charged in the intermediate. Now let me write the two rings first, and let me then attach my substituents. This is probably the toughest part in learning this mechanism, is just how to draw the products. And you might remember I had some hesitation about drawing the similar products from the reaction of the bromine. The reason I've drawn it this way is to show the two possible configurations of the ring. Now let's figure out where relative to that ring the substituents are going to be. So imagine that we're looking at the compound from down here. I was below the compound looking up at the plate of the paper like that. And we can imagine mercury being on top here in front of the board, or we can imagine mercury being behind the board. In either case, this ethyl group and the methyl group would be closer to you if we're looking from that position, and then the back methyl group and deuterium would be away from us, correct? So I'm going to draw it that way. I'm going to put ethyl. Oh! Except no, I've made our lives a little bit trickier than that even, because I've already got a wedge or a dash. So let's just choose that in this reaction, the ethyl and methyl groups will stay in the plane of the board, and then the methyl and the deuterium will either get pushed back or pushed forward by the mercury reacting. Let's do it that way. So we'll keep the ethyl and methyl the same, but then the other groups would be pushed either backwards or forwards. Notice that the two connections to the mercury are pointed the same way. It's not possible to have a three-membered ring where one group is pointed one way and one group is pointed the other, because you can't have a bond that twists 180 degrees around in space, or 360 or whatever that would end up being. So this one step occurs with what's known as anti-addition. This one step is syn-addition, because it adds to just one face of the double bond. Yes?
Oh, sorry, I left an arrow out. At the same time this sort of wraparound mechanism is occurring, one of the acetates gets kicked off as well. So that's why it's not double plus, because you do lose a minus during this process. Yeah.
Why is it one has the positive sign and the other doesn't?
Because I hadn't finished writing the structure. So this portion of the mechanism occurs with syn stereochemistry. Occurs as a syn addition. Both new connections to where the alkene was located. Are pointed the same way. And again, it's not physically possible for just this much of it to be anti. Again, you can't have the ring point one direction, wrap around in space, and magically end up pointing the other direction. Now, here's a story that I'll probably end up repeating multiple times, and is the part that confuses the people most about this mechanism. So I'm only going to say it once today. I'm going to expect that you'll go home and read it before you ask me about it. And then once you've read it, come back and ask me if you're confused. How many of you have read alkenes already? So we're falling down on trying to stay ahead of me. Okay, when you read this chapter then, good luck in some ways. Just because what I said may make sense as you read it, but it's a lot to absorb. I recognize that. That's why I keep expecting and hoping that you've read before you've come to class. So in fact, I won't answer any questions about what I'm about to say right now to make you all have to go off and read. But here's the story. This is a cyclomercurinium ion. Cyclo meaning cyclic. Mercury, put a plus charge, mercurinium. So it's not as scary as it sounds. Cyclically positively charged mercury ion. It's not a carbocation. So there's not going to be any carbocation rearrangement because there isn't one. That's the regiochemical importance of this reaction, that you don't have carbocation shifts. But what's going to happen next? Because you've got a ring, and you might imagine that water or something else might come in and attack on the left-hand side of that ring or the right-hand side, the way that I have it drawn at least. Which side do you think it would make more sense for it to attack? If this was an SN2 style attack. Why? So we have a secondary versus tertiary position. So if this was SN2, we would expect that the secondary position should be the one that's more prevalent to attack, the one over here. And if we had an SN2 style attack, what should happen to the stereochemistry at that position? It gets inverted, or should, right? Mm-hmm. What if I tell you inversion occurs, but at the tertiary center instead? Why can you think, what's, and since most of you haven't read it, this is going to be really your guess, but I want to see what you might come up with. Why would it attack the tertiary center instead? Can't be sterics, because sterics would tell us to attack the secondary. Well, this is kind of a strained structure, having one atom that's bridging two others. One of these bonds is weaker than the other. Which one? Well, it might make sense based on the answer I gave you, that it's the left-hand part. Why? Because if you were to form a carbocation at that position, that would be the more favorable carbocation to form. That means, effectively, less energy would be needed to break that bond because the carbocation that results is more favorable. At the same time that bond would take less energy to break, that means it's a weaker bond. If it's a weaker bond, it is longer and
more stretched and ready to break in comparison to the bond that is going instead to the secondary position, which, if it were to break, would produce a less favorable carbocation. And so because this is not a symmetric ring, one bond is longer than the other, that's the one that breaks, and that's why the attack occurs at the tertiary position. So this reaction still occurs with Markovnikov regiochemistry, that the eventual thing that gets added in, which is going to be water, is still going to occur at the more substituted position, because that's the position whose bond would prefer to break first. Now, I think that took long enough to say that we're now out of class time, but let me just wrap up. I'm not going to explain from this point on, I just want to have written the mechanism down. But we will pick that up with this on Wednesday and complete the story. So let me just show you the overall process that happens. Notice this is the first formal use, I believe, of these ones and twos in class. Might have mentioned it before, but critically important now. What this means is the first reagent, including water, happens before you do anything with the second set of reagents. And so what you'll form first is a mercury intermediate that gets decomposed by this compound called sodium borohydride, which we're actually going to be seeing quite frequently, even more this quarter. It shows up just this quarter in this reaction. Next quarter, lots of places. So the end result is going to be a mixture of two alcohols. It's still a mixture because we still have the double bond that could be attacked from one of two different directions. That's why we end up with the two different products. The part that we need to finish discussing is one, I'll say again, why, what did I do? I drew the wrong product. sorry. Darn it. Because this example molecule I started with does not show what I wanted to show with regiochemistry, because it's going to add still to the Markovnikov position. What I really wanted to show is the fact, what I really need to show is the fact we do end up with two enantiomers. So we're totally out of time, so I'll just pick up on this discussion on Wednesday.